And welcome to Tuesday's Topical Currents. I am Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. It's our special pledge edition, right, Joe?
Mm-hmm. It's going well, I think.
Yes.
I hope.
I hope so, too. Well, today we're going to look at the magic of the ancient craft of knitting and its power to sustain many through human survival and triumph alike. Why is knitting part of the lives of so many authors? Prolific author and teacher Anne Hood has edited original essays by 27 outstanding writers in the book Knitting Yarns, Writers on Knitting, and she joins us from Providence, Rhode Island. Welcome to you, Anne.
Hi, thanks for having me, Bonnie. I'd love to talk about knitting.
Of course.
So do I. Also with us is contributing author, teacher, and founder and executive director of the Woodstock Writers Festival, Martha Frankel. And she joins us from Boyceville, New York. Welcome to you, Martha.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, too.
So first, I want to congratulate you both on a great book for knitters and lovers of good writing alike.
Yes, it appeals to both. It appeals to everybody.
So, Anne, let's begin with you. You came to knitting, or maybe I should say knitting came to you under unimaginably tragic circumstances. If you would you tell us how you began knitting?
Yeah, it was back in 2002. My 5-year-old daughter, Grace, died suddenly of a virulent form of strep that April. Mm. And throughout my whole life, it had been words that sustained me through all sorts of, you know, heartbreaks and losses. I liked to read if I wanted to escape, and I liked to write to understand what was going on around me. But after Grace died, I found that words actually escaped me, and this dual source of comfort I'd had my whole life was gone. 6 months later, still grieving, you know, pretty much full-time, still unable to read and write, a wonderful friend said to me, you know, you have to get out of your head. You should do something with your hands. And out of desperation, as a home ec failure, I said, like, what? And she said, learn to knit. And really, those simple words and that simple act, I always say, saved my life.
Can you explain exactly what it was? Do you know what it was about knitting that sustained you through that time?
I think it's a combination of things. You know, it's actually physiologically, it's been proven that knitting does calm you down. It slows your heartbeat. It lowers your blood pressure. There's something incredibly soothing about the textures of the yarn and the sound of the needles. But I think even more importantly, I had to concentrate so much on getting a simple row of knit stitches, you know, done without dropping one or adding stitches or just messing up in, you know, a myriad of ways, that my brain could relax and take time off from the grieving. And they say that knitting, like jogging or swimming, has the ability to have your mind both at rest and active. And I think that's kind of the magic.
And Martha Frankel, what was your first attachment with knitting?
I learned how to knit in the late 90s. My best friend was a great knitter, and she made me a dress, like a knit dress. And it was really fun and funny. And
that must take a while.
Yeah, it took almost a year, and there was lots of fittings, and but she taught me how to knit, and I remember, you know, I kept knitting, and nothing made sense. It didn't look good, and it was sort of like a women's figure. Some places it would be wider and narrower. I could never get it together, and then one day I knit a line, and then I turned it, and I knit the next line, and the next, and the next, and they were perfect. Mm. And that sort of took my breath away, because I had never done anything quite like that.
As someone who knows absolutely nothing about knitting, I've always heard the term knit one, purl two. What is a purl versus a knit?
A purl is like a backwards knit. The needle goes in the front instead of in the back of the stitch. And so you bring your yarn around. So it's just like the opposite of knitting. And really, those are the only two stitches. If you can knit and purl, you can make anything. Or so they say, right, Martha?
That's what they say. I'm always waiting. I'm always waiting for the person who says, there's a third stitch, and here's why you've never knit so well. Find out
the secret stitch.
Then you'll
what they don't tell us about.
But are you happy with your knitting now?
This is Martha speaking.
Yes.
I have always been a terrible knitter. And when Anne, Anne came to the Woodstock Writers Festival 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and she was talking about how she was doing this book. And I, you know, I was so intrigued by it. I love writers. I love knitting. And I had this story I wanted to write, but I would never have been ballsy enough to ask if I could be included. And then she called me a few weeks later and said, you know, there's a space in the book. Would you like, is there anything you'd like to write? And I was so excited because I did want to tell this story, but I hadn't knit in years, and I wasn't going to tell her that. I wasn't going to tell you that. But when the book came out, or when it was getting close to coming out, I started taking knitting lessons for the first time in years and years and years. And now I'm a wonderful, proficient knitter who will rip something out if it's not right. I'm a good knitter now. So that's amazing.
Now, neither one of you are doing baby booties, are you?
No, but I could. I'm not. I wouldn't be embarrassed to do them.
Yeah,
Martha.
I don't care enough.
Martha, tell us about your story in knitting yarns because it's so great. Do you mind sharing a little bit about it?
Yeah, my best friend who taught me to knit was my best friend. We had been around the world with her and her husband. They lived on my road. I live in a very rural area. When you meet somebody who you know you get along with, he and I love to cook. His wife's an artist. My husband's an artist. They like to draw together. I mean, we just had a lot in common. And we were best friends for years. We traveled every winter. And she walked into my house one day and said, "We're moving to Texas. There's a planet coming. It's going to knock the Earth off its axis. 3 billion people are dying, and we need to go be with the children of God." Mm. And after I stopped laughing, I realized she was deadly serious. Mm. And it was such a shock. It took me almost a month to be able to catch my breath. And at that point, she said she was going down to Texas to see if God was talking to her. Mm. And I decided that I had to make these 5 scarves for myself, for her, and for her 3 best friends. And I felt that if I knitted these scarves perfectly, she wouldn't go. So that's the basis of the story. And, you know, I was thinking today, when I was a little girl, my father bought me an abacus and a bacchus. I don't know how to say it even. You know what I'm talking about?
Sure.
Yeah, those things with the beads.
Beads, yeah.
And I was obsessed with it. And I remember one night bringing it into the dining room, and my mother said, "Leave that thing out of here." My father said, no, it's okay. It'll quiet her. And that's what knitting does for me.
Yeah.
It's almost like sucking your thumb. I mean, it's just so clearly self-comforting.
And there's actually one of the essays in the book by the writer Elisa Chappelle is about the day she went to the doctors, and he said she had high blood pressure. And she was incredibly stressed about everything from small family matters to things like, you know, war and disaster and, you know, large monumental things. And she said, "Okay, I am a nervous wreck." And he said, "Take yoga." And she said, "I hate yoga. It's too competitive." And he said, "Well, I heard knitting is good." And so she started to knit, and it, in fact, did lower her blood pressure. So there's something about the idea, and it quieted her mind. Like all these things that were keeping her up at night, she could kind of hold at bay while she knit.
Now, do you go outdoors on the porch in a rocking chair and do your knitting? Or?
Now, you know, this is what you don't know. Knitting is for hipsters. There are young knitters. There's no more grandmas. You know, you walk into a knitting circle now, and you know, a lot of people have tattoos and piercings.
You know, I was going to say, Anne, that when I attended your reading, reading for Knitting Yarns a couple of weeks ago at the book fair, I was struck by the diversity of the rather large audience. I mean, there were men, there were women, young, old. Do you think knitting's having a resurgence, or ended?
No, I think it's a resurgence, and there's a lot of factors contributing to it. But the Council for Crafts, you know, did a survey and found that the resurgence began after 9/11. And there have been resurgences in kind of interesting things like board game sales after 9/11.
Right.
But knitting is a big one, and I think it did speak to a lot of people's fear and anxiety, but also to the fact that people kind of cocooned, you know, stayed home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also been a lot of, like, the patterns now are beautiful, and the yarn, there's so many different yarns and colors. You know, back in the 40s and 50s, there were, like, 5 colors. And they were all that scratchy wool.
Mel Brooks,
I'm serious, right? I mean, everything was gray or beige.
Five colors back then.
There were five colors, you know, of yarn. And the yarn was scratchy. And now there's just so many combinations of beautiful yarns. And you even can knit with yarns that produce their own striping.
Mm.
And so
that's
it's
what I'm doing now. I'm doing a self-striping yarn. Oh, my God, it's so gorgeous.
Well, we're
going
to...
It's fun when it reveals itself. You know, you're like, whoa, now here comes the purple. It's great.
Well, we're going to talk more about self-striping yarns and more from the book Knitting Yarns, Writers on Knitting. We're speaking with the editor of the book, Ann Hood, as well as one of 27 contributors. And that's author Martha Frankel. It's our pledge edition of Topical Currents. Need to take that break. Please contribute. Support local programming on WLRN.
Regional
programming on WLRN. Let's take a break and we'll be back.
I want to thank everyone who's called in and given support, right, Bonnie?
Yes, we do appreciate your support, and we ask you to continue to
And as
your...
though you haven't heard it enough, our telephone number is 866-247-9576.
Or you can pledge online at WLRNradio.org.
Now let's get back to business.
Let's get back to Knitting Yarns, Writers on Knitting. And we're speaking with author and teacher Ann Hood, prolific author, actually. And we're also speaking with author, teacher, and founder and executive director of the Woodstock Writers Festival, Martha Frankel. And we're talking about the book Knitting Yarns. So we left off, we were talking about self-striping yarns. That's pretty exciting.
It's more than that. It's when you go into the knitting store now, into the yarn store, oh, my God, it takes your breath away. There are hand-dipped yarns, and, oh, my God, it's just incredible.
Yarn made by women in Uruguay, you know, in a cooperative. I mean, you can find... I actually saw yarn made out of seaweed that comes from Nova Scotia.
Really?
Oh, my. Yeah,
and it is amazing, beautiful yarn, very supple, and it smells very slightly salty. So, like, while you're knitting with it, there's just this lovely ocean
breeze.
Going.
Yeah.
Yes. It's amazing. And I want to say that another myth about knitting is that it's all women doing it. But as you pointed out, Bonnie, at the our panel at the book fair, there were men in the audience, and we actually have three men contributors in knitting yarns.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Rosie Greer.
A famous knitter, that's right.
That's right. Yeah. Ann, tell us about knitting yarns. I mean, how did you gather so many great authors in one place, and how did it come? You had written The Knitting Circle before this, is that right?
Yeah, my novel, The Knitting Circle, came out in 2006. And, of course, as I said, I began knitting in 2002. And when I go to readings or lectures or teach at writers' conferences, I bring my knitting. I get a lot of knitting done because it helps me listen. I mean, it really calms me, as Martha was saying, and it kind of makes you still. And I always sit in the back row so I don't distract whoever's speaking. And, you know, I started to notice I'm not the only writer in the back row knitting.
Right.
There's Anita Shreve, and there's Eleanor Lipman, and Samantha Land Chang. I mean, so many writers with their baskets of yarn, you know, knitting. And like all knitters, we started to ask each other, what are you knitting? What's the great yarn store in this town? And eventually, well, how long have you been knitting? And I began to hear lovely stories of learning to knit, of memories of maybe a grandmother or mother knitting. I even heard funny stories about, you know, writers who had tried to knit but failed, and they would come up to me at the end of the reading and say, how can you do that, you know? So I would be laughing, I would be feeling kind of warm and fuzzy, I would be crying after hearing these stories, and I thought, you know, people should be hearing these stories. These writers should tell the world their stories. And so I went to my editor and described the project. And I have to say, initially, her eyes kind of glazed over, although she was the editor for The Knitting Circle. And, you know, it was quite a big bestseller internationally, so I know she is behind my love of knitting. I wasn't sure the book appealed to her immediately, but when she heard the people who were really eager to contribute, she got very excited about the project, too. And at the 11th hour, we got Ann Patchett and Barbara Kingsolver. And that's why it's 27. It had been 25, but here were these two, you know, amazing writers who I learned late in the game were also knitters, and they agreed to write their essays in something like 2 weeks. And so we've just got this dynamite list. And I have to say that I called or emailed the writers I knew who knit, but I started getting emails from other writers saying, I want to be in the anthology. I heard about it. And so there's something about knitting and writing and writers that just clicks. You know, they were very excited to contribute.
What do you think that is? I mean, why do you think it is that so many writers knit?
What do you think,
Martha?
I think that it's a, you know, when you're a writer, you're always observing. It's exhausting. And when you said that there are a lot of writers in the back row knitting, there are a lot of writers in the back row observing. This is where we go to. This is where writers are most comfortable, in the back of the room watching. And when you're a writer, you know, you might not get to the computer or the paper for hours and hours, but the brain is always going, going, going.
Right.
And I find, for me, knitting is one of the few times when I am really there. I'm, you know, if Ram Dass was right and being here now is the most important thing, I never feel that except when I'm knitting.
Mm. So it's almost like a Zen practice, keeping you in the moment and focused.
I think that's true.
I think
that's well said.
I think it's, you know, for a writer who's always saying, oh, my God, what about this twist? What about that? What would happen if? There is a way of quieting your mind. I will say that since I started knitting again really, really, you know, seriously, my writing has amped up, too.
Oh,
that's what I was wondering. Tell me, talk about that.
I just feel like when I'm knitting, I'm knitting, but when I'm writing, I'm there. The same thing that's happening when I'm knitting is sort of leaking into the rest of my life, is that when I'm writing, I'm way more focused, you know. And now sometimes I think it's because I can't wait to get back to knitting. I feel like I have to do a certain amount of pages.
Yeah.
So I get in front of the computer and I'm not wasting any time because I want to get back to that hat.
That's
so
funny.
That is funny.
Well, you know what I found is the best example I can think of is I had an essay due for a literary journal for Tin House. And I wrote it and it was good, but it wasn't quite right. Something was missing. And I stared at the page, as you do, you know, and I had a couple missteps. And then I just sort of, in frustration, got up and sat down with my knitting. And I think I knit for about half an hour. And I was like, I know how to fix it. Put down the knitting. It was like the knitting allows your brain to work in a way that isn't active.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. And it was the exact right fix. And I swear the knitting is what opened the door for that.
Let me ask you, when you first started to knit, did you go to a teacher? Is that how you began?
Well, you bet. I didn't even realize that knitting was moving one stitch, a stitch from one needle to the other. I had no idea what it was. And even as I was doing it, I was so confused for, I would say, 3 months. I mean, I was knitting these scarves with these, you know, I call them my Swiss cheese scarves. They had these big holes in them. I dropped stitches all the time. But she was patient and funny and, best of all, ironic. You know, she has such a dry sense of humor and would not hesitate to laugh at me, which I loved, because she was very human.
Did she do some nitpicking?
Okay. Were you always part of a knitting circle, Anne? Were you always with other people?
No, I learned privately.
Okay.
And I actually never joined a knitting circle. And I think maybe that was why when I wrote the novel, I kind of created one that I wished had existed when I needed it. Instead, it was more like me being an AA. I had all the knitting circles on my bulletin board. And when I would feel grief kind of taking hold of me and rising up, I would look and drive sometimes an hour and a half to whatever knitting circle was meeting at that time. So they were more, instead of the community of it, it was more like an AA meeting of needing to knit and calm my mind and let some time pass.
I'm in my first knitting circle now.
You are? I was wondering. I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, I just started a few months ago. Just mentioned knitting to a couple of people, and they said that they knit, but they weren't good. And we have this friend who's a knitting teacher, and so we all started gathering once a week, and she said the first week, bring in all your unfinished projects. And she helped a lot of people get their projects done and told them what to do next. And I laid out all my 4 projects that I was working on. And she said, you need to rip them out. I was like, what?
Well, we need to take a quick break here.
Oh, we'll have to come back to the projects and the knitting circle. Okay, we are speaking with author, teacher, and founder and executive director of the Woodstock Writers Festival, Martha Frankel, and author and teacher, Anne Hood, about the book, Knitting Yarns, Writers on Knitting. A break, and we'll return.
Well, we certainly hope we've gotten some support from our listeners. We're told we're doing very well, so we want people to keep it up and support the regional and local programming you hear on WLRN, which keeps a South Florida flavor, and I think someone's at the door.
Maybe they're going to pledge. Okay, knitters or not, we are speaking about the book Knitting Yarns, Writers on Knitting with Martha Frankel. She's a contributor to the anthology, and the editor of the anthology is Anne Hood. And where we left off, Martha, you were talking about joining this knitting circle, and you joined, and the teacher said you needed to rip out everything you were doing. Why was that?
Well, everybody else she told that they should finish their projects, because for me, she said I should just rip them out. And she was right. Here's what it was. I was like making a blanket that didn't really have a beginning or an end. The edges were all amorphous. I was making a scarf that I hated. I was making another scarf that was like an inch and a half wide. She said, is this a tie? Here's the deal. I never committed to making anything. Like, I was always like, oh, okay, I like this yarn. She said, rip it out and start making things. And she told me two great things, which it sort of goes against what I believe in. She said, stop knitting scarves. Stop knitting flat things. They're boring. You'll stop knitting if you do that. And stop giving away your stuff. Start making stuff for yourself and make it perfect. And that, you know, I don't think I own anything I've ever knitted before, because in the past I gave everything away. Mm-hmm. I thought that was so cool. Now I say, you know what, I like this. I'm going to make it for myself. And now it's Christmas time. I am making some things for other people, but not a lot. And when people say, that's nice, I'd like one, I don't say, well, take this one. I'm like, yeah, you should learn to knit. The new me.
Right.
You know, I think I mentioned at that panel at the book fair that when you pull out your knitting, it's called frogging, because it's rip it, rip it, rip it.
Right, right. That's
great. The other night I was giving a talk about knitting yarns in Massachusetts, in Duxbury, Massachusetts, and someone told me, no, it's called, when you do that, what they say is you're tinking. And I said, tink? And she said, yeah, that's knit spelled backwards, so you're unknitting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So see, there's even a lingo. I don't know if Joe knew that.
No.
No, I'm getting quite an education here this afternoon.
I think he's going to go right out and buy some needles and yarn.
I know he is.
You know what? If you walk into a yarn store now and, you know, you just stand there for a little while and look and see what it is you could knit, sometimes it's like really intimidating, because the yarns are so much, they're so beautiful. You think, what am I ever going to do with that?
Right. Right,
you
know, I know.
You know, but getting back to the ripping out, I think that's a great aspect of knitting, that you do get to redo, and it's great for perfectionists, because
that's,
you don't
right.
like it, you just rip it out. Talk about that.
It is so freeing, you know, that there's something that you can make a mistake in and take it out and no one will even know. I mean, I'm such a type A personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when I knit that first scarf, you know, I left after my first lesson with maybe four or five rows, it took me 2 hours, and I went to the grocery store, and at that time, after Grace had died, the grocery store was like a minefield to me, because either the Muzak was playing a song she liked, or, you know, the next season had come, and there were like Seckle pears, and I realized she loved Seckle pears, and I didn't have to buy them anymore, or something happened, or I saw someone who I hadn't seen since she died. So it was a minefield, but I did those four rows and I felt so good that I said, I'm going to the grocery store, you know? And of course I ran into someone and they came up to me crying, and I fled the store and I got in the car, and there was that, you know, four or five rows, and I picked it up and I knit for 30 minutes until I could not get one needle into the stitch. It was completely tight, like a knot, and I thought, I must be finished. Knitting must tell you when you're done. The needles don't go in the stitches anymore. And the next day I went back to my knitting store, and Jen just, you know, laughed herself silly. She said, well, it's all wrong. And she took it off the needles and just pulled the yarn and unknit the entire thing. I gasped. I said, you don't know this, but I'm a writer. And that would be like hitting the delete button without trying to fix it. Mm-hmm. So I am going to fix it. She said, you can fix anything in knitting. And I think those were the most freeing words I've ever heard. There really are no mistakes.
Just take it out
and do it again.
Martha, you going to say something?
No, the redoing, I never did that in my first incarnation as a knitter.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes pull out a few rows. Now I pull out pretty 90% of it.
Yeah.
Or I just, I want it to be perfect. I get that now.
Yeah.
That knitting can be perfect, and it can have a mistake, and if you can live with it, fine. But if you can't, it's not going to get better. Your eye isn't going to not notice it.
Right, right.
When you encounter other knitters, I'll ask you both, and you can each comment, do you feel an immediate bond, a camaraderie? Does it bring you immediately close to somebody?
I say yes. Do you think so, Martha?
I'm not that nice. You know what I'm like.
Well, you know what's interesting?
I'm kidding. Yes, it does. Of course it does. We're legion. Like,
yeah.
You notice, if somebody's, walking around with a piece of yarn that they just sewed the edges in and cut it off, and it's, on their sweater. Love
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, you know what was funny is after I learned to knit, I learned that I had many friends who knew how to knit, and they had all been meeting to knit and take, road trips to great yarn shops. But, of course, I wouldn't know that because they never invited me. I wasn't a knitter. And I got to enter this new phase of friendship with, half a dozen women that I knew in other ways, and now we could call each other and say, hey, come over and knit. It was a whole new world with the same people I had known.
What are you working on today? You have knitting with you right now?
I do. I'm knitting an orange dish rag, and my mother said, I hate those dish rags.
Oh, no. So I guess you can't give it to your mother now.
Well, I said it's not for you.
All right. What did I read about? Is it Mason-Dixon dish rags?
They're fantastic.
What
now,
are they?
What are
okay,
they?
Ann Shane is one half of a team called Mason-Dixon Knitting. And one lives in New York and one lives in Nashville. That's the Mason-Dixon. And Ann Shane has an essay in Knitting Yarns, which a fantastic essay. And they have two books out, the first one called Mason-Dixon Knitting, and I forget the second title. But they have great patterns that look very kind of homey but sophisticated at the same time. And their dish rags have this beautiful basket weave pattern. They're gorgeous.
And is that the kind you're working on?
No, I'm doing the really simple kind.
Oh, okay.
Is that the kind of dish rag that's more decoration? You don't really use it?
Well, I don't know. They're really good.
No, I want a man's dish rag.
Like the fancy hand towels?
Well, no, you use it, don't you, Martha? I gave you one.
I use it all the time. I love it.
Yeah.
Not as cool
great.
As the
they're
one,
cotton
the
yarn.
One you made It's not as cool as the one you made for John Sebastian, the tie-dyed one, but it's
right,
nice.
Tie-dyed that one, yeah.
Oh, some favoritism. Listen, before we go, because we have to go soon, Martha, tell us about the Woodstock Writers Festival.
It's a once-a-year gathering in April of writers and readers. We started about 5 years ago. Abigail Thomas is one of our advisory board members, and Anne is on the advisory board, and it's just writers coming to Woodstock to do panels and workshops, a lot of fun. We're April 3rd to 6th this year, 2014, really excited. Jane Ann Phillips is coming. Lots of people. Pamela Ahrens, I'm just reading her book, The Virgins. Absolutely terrific. So we're just putting it together.
It's a great festival. It's fun, but it's also inspiring, and you meet a lot of wonderful writers and writers that you admire are walking around Woodstock. It's great.
Well, we want to thank both of you for being with us. Martha, your website is marthafrankel.com, and Anne, yep. Do you have a website?
Yeah, it's www.annhood.us.
U.S.,
like the United States.
Oh, U.S., okay.
Yep. Yep.
All right, and we've been talking to Martha Frankel. She is the executive director and founder of the Woodstock Writers Festival, and she's an author and teacher and a contributor to the book Knitting Yarns, Writers on Knitting, which we've been discussing, which was edited by author and teacher Anne Hood. And thanks so much for joining us for our pledge edition of Topical Currents today.
Thanks so much
Thank
for
you.
Having us.
And that wraps up today's edition. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical supervision from Michael Stock. Paul Leary is online producer. Again, our pledge line is 1-866-247-9576. We hope you'll support the regional and local programs and news on our station. You can also quickly pledge online at WLRNradio.org. Today's calendar. On this day in 1894, 119 years ago, the birth of writer and humorist James Thurber in Columbus, Ohio. His range was prodigious. Essays in the New Yorker, cartoons, short stories, and comic drama. He wrote The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Dorothy Parker said Thurber's cartoons resembled unbaked cookies. And on this day in 1925, 88 years ago, the birth of multi-entertainer Sammy Davis Jr. in Harlem. He danced, sang, played vibes, trumpet, drums, and did impressions. And one more while we consider Geraldine and The Devil Made Me Do It. On this day in 1933, 80 years ago, the birth of comic Flip Wilson in Jersey City. He died in 1998. Did you know George Carlin was one of his TV writers? So we leave with a thought from James Thurber, who once wrote a New Yorker column about the spreading of the word, you know, the words you know. You know, you never know. And a quote from James Thurber. If I have any beliefs about immortality, it is that certain dogs I have known will go to heaven, and very, very few persons. Make that pledge, gentle listener. Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned now for Here and Now from NPR News.